I'm glad to see everybody here this morning, and I think we're leveling out, because when I sat down earlier, like Dr. Krause said, it was listing this way heavily. So glad to see. It only takes a few families for us to fill in. So glad to see you all here today. Let's see. There is a word that I used to despise. A word that, as a kid, I really disliked so much, and it made me angry. The meaning of it, the purpose of it, I only understood part of the word, or the part of the purpose. And I was looking at it from a very negative standpoint. And get the context, I'm the youngest of four boys. So I had three big brothers that were rather unrestrained as they dealt with their little brother. How many are there in here that are the youngest in their family? The youngest in their family. Okay, yes, okay. So I think as I speak about this, you guys might say, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I get that. So when I think about this word, I realized at growing up, and I thought when I was 18, I'll be grown up, and then I hit 19 and 20, and I realized, no, I'm still growing. I'm 49 now, I'm still growing. And growing up, it was until I was in my early 30s before I understood the value of this word and the meaning of it that I really dislike so much. And it turned around to where I started to love the word and understand its value and its meaning and the downside of it, the potential downside. I got the context of it. But let me start out with this. If we can go to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. And I'm going to read, starting verse 1. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that ye walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with longsuffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, even as ye are called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. Let's jump over to Romans. Romans 13. Chapter 13, verse 1. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. The word is authority. That's the word I really disliked. Again, I was looking at it from a kid's perspective, the little brother's perspective. The perspective of all the teachers over me and the pastor, all the people that I tended to get in trouble with as a kid. I was seeing it only from the negative side. But let's read Webster's Dictionary's definition of authority. The power to give others orders, to give orders or make decisions. The power or right to direct or control someone or something. It is the confident quality of someone who knows a lot about something or who is respected or obeyed by other people. Here's something I like to think about. And we kind of play this game as kids, but even as adults we can do this. If you were president of the United States, you like playing games like that? Kind of like if you were. If you were president, how would you treat people? We've seen, in my life, I've seen presidents that I appreciate some that I don't appreciate as much. Now, they're still the authority, right? They're still the authority. That doesn't change. But seeing different leadership styles and seeing how they do things and how they use that authority. We have a friend who's a Secret Service agent. And he shares different stories about people in authority that he is responsible for their safety. And he's got some stories that would just make you furious thinking and hearing about the diplomats that he is obligated to protect and how they treat people and how they disregard our law. But it's still his job. Because his authority tells him, you still have to protect these people regardless. That's tough. But that's what he does. But on the other hand, he has shared some really cool stories. One of which is about George W. Bush, President George W. Bush, and how he treats people. So if you know this or not, most of you know this, but once a president's of the United States, that person and his family, immediate family, his wife at least, they would have that protection, Secret Service protection, for the rest of their lives. And the assignment that people in Secret Service love, they want the most, the ultimate assignment that they want, because there's a lot that they don't want, and I won't say those names, but there's some that they really want. And at the top of the list would be, and she just passed away, Barbara Bush. Because she was very, very precious, very kind lady. But George W. Bush and his wife, Laura Bush, just really respected and wonderful people. And what happened, he described, was when the Secret Service agents would go to their ranch, and they were there at the ranch for Thanksgiving or Christmas, what George W. Bush would do was he would make sure that the people that worked, let's say this is the team of Secret Service that worked on Thanksgiving, they would have Thanksgiving dinner, and George W. Bush would be serving them, and Laura Bush would be serving them. Hey, how do you want your steak grilled? And he's over there grilling her steak. Oh, I want mine medium rare. Oh, I want mine rare. Okay. He'd be grilling steaks, and Laura Bush would be serving them, and they're saying, no, you guys sit down. Wow. Think about it. That's incredible. But that comes from the heart, right? It's a servant's heart. And he would make sure that the people that had to work on Thanksgiving, he knew they were away from their families. He would kind of nose in where he wasn't supposed to, but he's still, you know, one of the presidents, right? He would press the supervisors to say, okay, now these guys that are having to work with us on Thanksgiving, I don't want them here on Christmas. I want the other team to make sure that they can get time, either Christmas or Thanksgiving with their families. I know they can't do both, but one or the other. And he would make sure, he would go out of his way, because why? He is a servant. Now, I'm not saying that everything about a particular person is perfect and we endorse everything. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying look at this example. A very powerful man and his wife and their servants. It comes from the heart. So where did authority begin? Where did it all start? Somebody answer this. Where? God, that's right. God, that's where all authority originated. So there are other types of authority that God ordained. Governments, institutions, it's family, of course, and of course Jesus modeled that for us. So something to think about when I said institutions, I'm thinking about our business. And we sold our first company, we sold 10 years ago. But at the height of our busy season of the year, we would have over 100 employees. And it was really busy and crazy. And I never thought of myself as working, or them all working for me. I thought of us as we all work together. But when it was all said and done and somebody had to make a decision, the authority had to be in place in order for everything to run properly. And that would be my decision as to how things ran. But when I looked at, once I had that authority, I didn't look at it as, wow, I'm the boss. I looked at it as, wow, I'm the boss and I've got this responsibility. If this doesn't work, this is on me. If this messes up, this is on me. So when you look at authority and you look at the people in that position, think on that. Because guess what? Every person in this room very likely will be in a position in authority at some point in their life over somebody else. Okay, I'm looking at some of the youngest people in here, the one that's about passed out right there, that he's going to be in a position of authority. He doesn't know that, but those of us that have been around for a while, we realize it's going to happen. So let's make sure we understand the value of authority. We need authority. Let's look at some examples of no authority, chaos, anarchy. In my lifetime, I saw it for the first time, and it wasn't a movie, but it looked like a really bad movie, like a horror movie to me. And I don't like horror movies, by the way. Okay, I don't watch them on purpose. And it happened in the early 90s. I don't even remember the year. You remember because you were down there. Andrew, Hurricane Andrew. And what we saw on TV was amazing. It was a war zone. It was desolated. It was wiped out. And people didn't have authority because the police, they were trying to survive themselves, trying to protect their homes. They were trying to get water that was clean for their family just to drink. Forget bathing, just something to drink that wasn't contaminated. They were trying to get food that wasn't contaminated. There was no power. Everything was just turned upside down or leveled, wiped out. They could go down their own street and not know it was their street because all the landmarks are gone. Everything's just debris. It's a mess. And I remember my brother's church went to South Florida. We were talking about this a few weeks back. And they went to help. They lived in Lakeland where the hurricane didn't do the damage. And they went down to Miami Homestead area and they took trucks loaded up with equipment, chainsaws, generators, water, food, all this stuff. And they had the church bus and it said Calvary Baptist Church on it. And so these guys are going and they're going down the turnpike and all of, you know, they're going and they're like, okay, we're starting to see some stuff, some damage. And then all of a sudden they couldn't drive anymore in a straight line. They had to slow down because there was debris all over the road. So they're going back and forth and they're making it. Then all of a sudden the road just starts and then they're stopped and they realize, oh, we got to get the stuff out of the way. We got to move it in order to use the rest of the turnpike. So they did, they started moving it. And from just out of nowhere, it seems, all these people came with weapons and they were going to take. Now, where were the police? They were nowhere around. But they didn't realize that those men from Calvary Baptist Church were a little smarter than that. So they had weapons as well. And so things worked out. Well, we'll just say that. And so they kept on going. But that is an example in our lifetime of no authority and how chaos will ensue. We need authority, right? We need it. We depend upon it. Another example is Katrina. Now, some of you younger folks might remember Katrina. How many years has that been, though? Wow. Okay. So, Katrina, it happened again. How many of you watched that on the news and just looked at it and like, this is a bad movie. This is a horror movie. What happened there? And you know what? That, I think God gives us that for many reasons, but one of them that sticks out at my mind is that it's showing us this is what it's like with chaos, with no control, with no authority. And the sin nature is alive and well. Now, there's the stories of the opposite, to where communities got together and they took care of each other. Those people that lived on that street, they got together and said, all right, we've got to help each other. That's what they did. So it's not all bad. There's some really good things. So we need authority. The concern that I had in sharing when Ray asked me to share about teach today. I really had one fear, and it's not public speaking. It's that you guys would look at this and you would connect with, okay, we're talking about authority, we're talking about fatherhood. And my fear is that you would look at me as if I'm trying to present myself as a perfect father. Problem is, there's 7 people sitting here that know otherwise. And I'm a very flawed person, and I'm striving, I'm growing, hopefully, and improving on those things. But I want to share it from a perspective of, these are things that I've learned, and I pray that you hear a message that is God's message and not a flawed man's message. So let's look at God's original authority. Let's just go to Genesis. And I love the simplicity. I don't like complex things. I don't like riddles. There are parts of the scripture that I read that I go, why is that so confusing to me? But I like Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God. I know there's a second half of the verse, created the heaven and the earth. But I just like those words. In the beginning, God. That's pretty simple, isn't it? Is there any debate room there? That's the beginning. That's the start. That's everything. So when we look at that, to me, that verse alone establishes where it all started. So, you know, I have thought about this before at different times. I'm like, but what about before God? Oh, great, we're going to do that debate. What about before God? Something had to exist. Okay, not necessarily. You know, I'm not even entitled to know about things before God. Who says I'm entitled to know that? I'm not entitled to know that. Now, I can think that I'm entitled to do it, and then I'll end up losing my mind trying to figure it out. So let's just move on and say what matters is the evidence that we see that God exists. We're surrounded by it. We see things that are designed. It took a designer, right? It took a plan, organization. That's evidence. The evidence, we don't have time. If we spent 8 hours a day going through the evidence for the next 30 days, we still barely touch what evidence exists, that God exists. So let's look at the church, the authority in the church. Christ is the head of the church. So there's your connection of authority from God to Jesus himself. When you think about what Martin Luther had said about this, this was a sermon. Isn't it great? When you look at Jesus' sermons, man, they're just so like to the point, done. So, like those sermons. Martin Luther said, the best and most comforting sermon the Lord ever delivered on earth. It was that sermon right there. And we've heard it before, we'll hear it again, but it's great that we have it. Ephesians 4, Ephesians chapter 4, 5 and 6, verses 5 and 6. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. Yet again, the authority of God. So when we doubt authority, or we meet a person that doubts authority, they doubt the Bible, nature, design, organization, God himself. You know what? Again, you're doubting all this overwhelming evidence. When I meet an atheist, I just say I don't believe in atheists, and I don't mean to be rude, or I'm not trying to be rude, but it just is beyond me to think that there's somebody that has that much faith to ignore all the evidence. It just takes an enormous amount of faith. You know, I think about this too. Let's just take one, for example, that's gravity. That's a law. That's order, isn't it? When you think about it, that's really order. So gravity exists. We fight it. Some of us use it. Most of the time, we just manage it. And if you think about it, let's say the most powerful people in the world that are our lawmakers, let's say it's Congress. Congress gets together, U.S. Congress, the Senate, the President, and then they get all the world leaders, all of them, the good players, the bad players, everybody. And they all agree 100%. And they say, we're going to change the law. We're going to rewrite the law of gravity. They could do it on paper. Does it change the law? No, that's absurd. But the arrogance of man, it's the same idea, in my opinion, of being an atheist, of being one that is willing to ignore the evidence of God. So what does this have to do with authority? Everything started with God. That's what I want to establish there. So, you know, I look at that debate, and it's just, it really is a devilish distraction. So let's look at this next thing here. Governments, that's a tough one for me. I am one that will look at things that man has created, laws that they've created that are over the top, oppressive, ridiculous, and that continues to be a struggle for me. I have to be careful when I look at laws and remembering God has put them in a place of authority over me. That's still a struggle for me personally. And I remember, okay, God's put them in there, but, careful, I'm going down that road. I have to be careful when I begin to argue. Now I have to be careful when I begin to justify my position. Now, I'm going to say something that's probably kind of harsh, but I apply it to myself. Because I was a very, very, very successful liar as a kid. Man, I've got a lot of experience as a liar, okay? And it was because I could justify things as a kid. I could reason through it as a kid. And when I recognize that I'm beginning to justify things again, you know what that means? It's very likely I might be trying to lie to myself. Because if I can convince myself that I'm right, man, I'm nearly unstoppable in my own mind. So be careful. I'm going to throw that little thing out to you. If you're justifying things or you're having to work awful hard to justify something in your own mind, why you should be doing this, maybe you got some of that going on yourself. So be careful, because guess what? The principles still apply, the biblical principles still apply, that God put that authority in place. That's tough. And you will be challenged with that in life. A lot of the adults in here are going, uh-huh, because that's the way it is. Even when you're in the workplace and you're given stuff to do that you don't feel like is appropriate or you feel like is inappropriate. That means something that is quite possibly the wrong thing to do. So I look at this, and as we read through this and we heard the reading of it, I don't see any exceptions. Did God give any exceptions in this? There were no exceptions, were there? So when we look at how do we deal with that, since there's no exceptions in this, does that mean we do it even if it's something evil that we've been told to do? No. There is what still exists, the biblical principles. But we have to know. We have to constantly study the biblical principles to know how to apply those. And then you approach that person, that authority over you, with much prayer and a lot of research and a lot of counsel, and you go to them and you have to respectfully present your dilemma. Let's say you're in the medical field, and then you're working for this organization that you're proud to work with, you're helping people, but then all of a sudden they get into, let's say, assisted suicide, and let's say the law is passed and that's allowed now. And that organization you're working for, they start doing this, and you got to do it, or else you lose your job. What do you do about it? You go respectfully, but wait, let's step back for a minute. Let's make sure that before that event has come up, that you have been an example of a godly person. A person that has been professional, kind, joyful, helpful, the ideal employee, the ideal person to work with. And if you've done that, you've garnered a lot of respect. But if all of a sudden you show up and you've not done those things, you're late, you got a bad attitude, you're kind of poisoned for the whole team, and you've got issues, and all of a sudden you're going to become religious all of a sudden. That's the way they're going to see that. So think about that. It's the way that you are a testimony before the conflict ever occurs. I'm going to use my own daughter as an example, Whitney. She went into what I would consider the lion's den of the University of Florida, where liberals abound and conservatives are devoured, okay, or converted. And she went in knowing this, and she would come home day after day exhausted because she's trying to keep a good attitude amongst all the attacks, and just there's a lot of evil. There's great people there, but then there's a lot of evil too. And she would come home just exhausted from that. But it came to a point to where she wanted to do a project that she believed God wanted her to do. And it was about the unborn child. Not the tissue, the unborn child. And being pro-life. And she talked to us about it. She prayed about it. And she knew that she was going in to a rough situation. And that project had to be approved. Is that right? Had to be approved by the professors. And she knew when she took it in that they weren't going to like that. However, this person, and yes, as a father, it's Father's Day, I'm going to do this. This person, she had been the right testimony, a pleasant person to be around, a leader that the professors knew they could count on. So they had students that weren't doing so well or needed some leadership, they would tag Whitney. There were other leaders, yes, but when they broke into teams, they would tag her. And then when the people that were on time to class, she was always there. She got there extra early because she didn't want to fight parking issues so much. So she would always be there extra early. But she wanted to be helpful. One of the people that she spent a lot of time was actually a witch. Is that right? A self-proclaimed witch. And that was her ministry, trying to minister and to witness to a witch. She had professors that were absolutely in your face, condescending about the those who have a faith of any kind. But it was clearly targeted against Christians. So just a whole series of things. So she went in to present this to get approval for this pro-life project. And she's a motion graphics animator. Okay, so she was getting permission to do this. They didn't really like the idea, but they knew that, wow, she's respected. She graduated summa cum laude, and she was the one that they knew they could count on for everything. And how is it that they could justify saying no to her and deny her this? So all they could do was say, hey, could you adjust this? What one of the things was, can you take away the correlation that you're drawing of abortion and the Holocaust? Can you take away the correlation? And so things like that. So they knew they couldn't say no. That's an example, folks, of we've got to be a testimony. And that testimony's got to happen all the time. So you're going to be in those situations. Make sure you're applying your biblical principles. Know the biblical principles. Get counsel as you deal with that, because you are going to deal with that. Many of you have already dealt with it, because I see the heads nodding of, yep, you're going to be there again. Let's look at Daniel. Daniel chapter 4. The king spake and said, it is not... verse 30, sorry. The king spake and said, it is not this great Babylon that I have built for my house, for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. Wow. Okay, is there a bigger penalty? It's pretty much the top of the list, except death. And they shall drive thee from men, and the dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stand in his way or say unto him, what doest thou? At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Wow. He learned about authority, didn't he? See, God gives us authority, right? Whatever the position, level of authority we have, remember who the ultimate authority is. And that is a brilliant example. He could have taken Nebuchadnezzar out, right? Done, you're gone, that's it. But there was a greater value for him to have learned what he learned. And it's black and white. There's no question about his lesson and how it was effective. You know, I think about a person I know very well, grew up in a Christian home, a believer himself, and he was a guy that rebelled against authority. He prayed for victory over the authorities while violating biblical principles. That's what he was doing. It's like, Lord, overcome this. But he was violating all of God, many of God's principles. Like, wait a minute. How does God bless that one? He's not going to bless that. So he fought the courts. He fought the IRS. The government, he felt like, was against him. And he justified, there's that word again. He justified his belief, his attitude against the government, the IRS, the courts, because he did have a bad deal that was given to him in a divorce case. It was legitimate. The judge treated him very poorly. But that didn't license him to violate biblical principles elsewhere. So he justified that position. It was a bad deal. So he took the position that there was no authority over him. But at the same time, in all of his arguments, he was using law to state his position and to argue his position. He was using law. I was like, wait a minute. How do you do that? Because I had this conversation with him. How do you do that? How do you take the law that is really from God, government, you know, he put it in place. And it came from Mosaic law. By the way, our laws in the United States is Mosaic law. That's where it came from. Okay, until they start ripping out all of the big sculptures of Moses and the law over the U.S. Supreme Court, which that may happen, but still our law is based on Mosaic law. He was taking the position of, hey, they don't have authority, but I'm going to use this law that's based on authority to tell them they don't have authority over me. Like, I don't get it. That's what I kept telling him. I don't get it. And he says, well, you just have to understand. You've got to study more and understand. I'm like, no, there's a direct conflict. But he fought on. But you know what? Ultimately, God used other things in his life that just brought him to his knees. And he realized, as a believer, he ultimately realized, he fought for probably a good 20 years. But he ultimately realized God used those same authorities to bring him to his knees. And it worked out pretty well in the end, but what an ugly ride that he had to take, and there was no need for him to take that ride. Don't violate the biblical principles that we have. You know what? You hear about public servants. You've heard that term, public servant, public servant. When we hear that term, like sometimes I don't think they're serving us, they're just serving themselves. Okay, well, that's a lot of times that's true. That's just the way it is. But they are supposed to be public servants. But aren't we supposed to be servants, private and public? We are. So let's think about becoming a servant. Even though we're an authority, some of us now, some of you will become authority. I look at the young ladies in here, okay, that they are young, they're not married yet. Eventually they're going to have families. And you're going to have the authority over that household. Hopefully that household has a father and a mother. That can't always be controlled. But the father is the authority, right? But if the father's not in the picture, mom's the authority. Somebody's got to be that authority. You can serve at home, but you can also serve in other places if God calls you to do that. Exodus 20:12. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God has given thee. Okay, most people want to live for a long time, right? I'm going to just take that as a given. There's the incentive plan wrapped into the commandment, right? That is the first. That is the first commandment to have a promise with it. Why do we do things? Why do we go to work? We go to work to get paid, right? And there's some fulfillment. We can enjoy what we do, but there's an incentive we're after. There's a payout. There's something that we hope to get out of that. And here it is. God makes it so simple. Remember, I like simple things. Honor thy father and thy mother, that the days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. There's your incentive. There's incentives in this whole book. This book is God's incentive plan for doing things his way. That's what it is. It's one big incentive plan. Now there's another side to it, and that side is do it the other way and find out there's things that crash down on you and penalties. But God does that as a loving father, right? And that's the way that we should actually look at that. Now, looking at honor thy father and thy mother, who is your father? Now that's like, hey, that's pretty straight up. That's my father. It's dad. Right. But it's also your grandfather. Still your father. Honor thy father and thy mother. Your mother, your grandmother. There might be people that you're not biologically related to, but maybe God's put them in a position of being kind of your father figure. There's still the opportunity to honor them as well. Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. Children, obey your parents. I did not like this verse growing up. It's like, man, I'm so tired of hearing that one. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Okay, that was pretty obvious too, isn't it? There's not a debate on this stuff. It's written in the scriptures. As my heart grew closer to God, I began to love this verse. When I became a parent, I really saw the necessity in this verse. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou may live long on the earth. There again, there's your incentive. Again, it's laid out very, very clearly. The next verse. Let's keep reading. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Fathers in here, you can raise your hand or you can decide not to raise your hand. But if you've ever provoked your child, I'm going to be the one to raise my hand, okay? My kids know it. I have to admit this anyways because they're going to be going, no, raise your hand. I've provoked. We've all provoked. There's a way to handle that. We messed it up. Guess what? Dad's still growing too. And how do we deal with that? We go back after the situation, hopefully has calmed down enough, and we sit down one-on-one and say, you know what? I apologize. Own it. Dad, own it. And then go back and say, all right, I need help to work this out, to do this better, not to keep making the same mistake. One of the most damaging things for me growing up in church was seeing the man that would stand behind the pulpit would be so well polished that they seemed perfect. They had no sin to confess. It had been years since they've had to confess anything because they're just that good. I think that's done a lot of damage to a lot of people that I know, including myself. I think it's not an area of confession, but it is necessary for humility to be expressed. So let me just share a little phrase. I have blocked many blessings because I have violated the honoring the father and the mother. I don't know how many. How many blessings have I lost out on because I didn't simply follow the rules of honor your mom, honor your dad. Think about that. How many blessings have you blocked? How many blessings has God said, I had that blessing ready for you. You were just, the blessing was so close. I can't give it to you now. How many blessings have we lost out on? But we got to go forward, right? How many blessings can we enjoy because we begin to apply more and more of God's principles? Let me share this. My father, just a personal testimony. I realized in my early 30s that I had a real issue with authority. What that brought me back to was, how do I treat my parents? Well, I had a pretty good relationship with my father, but not with my mother. And God just really hammered me on that. The Holy Spirit just worked me over on it and just would not let it go, would not let it go. And I'd be in prayer and God was like, you still haven't dealt with that. Like, but I'm praying for this over here. This is to do with work, or this is to do with my wife, or this and this. But you still haven't dealt with that. The Holy Spirit just was pounding me. I couldn't get away. I'm like, I give up. So I went to my brothers and I said, guys, we owe Mom an apology. And they're like, what are you talking about? I didn't do anything. Like, no, it's going back years and years. We were very disrespectful to my mother, very disrespectful. Enough so that if she could throw punches and bloody some noses, we would have deserved them, okay? We could justify that she wasn't a perfect mother. Doesn't matter. There's no exception. Honor thy father and thy mother. It doesn't say honor them when they're honorable, does it? No. You honor them. So as my brothers and I, we started talking about it, we all realized, you know, that's right. That's right. And so what we did was we sat down with Mom, and without Dad around even. And, you know, we arranged it. Said, Dad, you're out. What? Just, we need to deal with Mom. So we took Mom out to dinner, and then we went back home, and we had a lot of time planned and just sat down and said, we need to apologize for what we did as kids. We spent hours going through and saying, well, I did this. I was respectful. And we thought of events, everything we could think of. We had to get it on the table. And she was just shocked. And we're like, wait a minute, we're giving her too much information. But it worked out. Because we asked for her forgiveness. Lots of tears. But there were lots of blessings. Now, that was the small part. The big part was, how do we treat her after this time? How do we do it? We're changing it. Habits need to be broken. Bad habits do. So what we did was, we made a pact with my brothers and myself. And we said, look, it's gloves off. If you are disrespectful to Mom, we are going to hammer you, and we're not even going to mention it. You're just going to get hammered. We will be in your business, in your face, and that's it. And we all agreed, like, you know what? The way we function, that's what has to happen. And that's what we did. And it was uncomfortable. And there were some arguments about it. But we had to come back to one thing, and that's the biblical principles, the commandments. Honor thy father and thy mother. And we did. And it's changed things, and it's just been a huge blessing, one after another. I had to do the same thing with my in-laws. That was tough. They're to be honored, right? Because when I married Paige, now they're my mother and my father. And I remembered writing a letter. This was about the same time. And I wrote a letter, and it was to my mother-in-law, and man, I could justify, I could argue you under the table. I would win this argument. I was right, with one exception. I was completely wrong, because I violated the commandment. And I went to them, and I had to humble myself genuinely and say, I was wrong. I am not arguing anything that I put in that letter. It doesn't matter because my heart was wrong and I'm going to make this right. It changed the relationship with my in-laws. And you know what? A year later, I look back like, what was the letter about? I can't remember. That literally happened. And I got so angry with myself because I didn't even remember what I was so right about. All I could remember was what I was wrong about, and God dealt with that. I'm going to challenge you guys today. I'm going to challenge you that if you are 8 years old and you are understanding this, if you are 18 years old, if you're 45, 49, I don't care what age you are, I want to know that you are hearing the challenge right now. The challenge is, have you honored your father and mother? Is there something there that has to be dealt with? My father is almost 82 next month. And I want to know that I have everything clear with the Lord. I'm going to challenge all of you. Doesn't matter what age you are in here. If your parents are still around, then I want you to really search your heart and pray it through and say, God, show me. Is there anything that I have to get right with my parents so that I can fully 100% honor them? That's what I challenge you with. So that first commandment with a promise, right? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. What's the promise? That it may be well with thee, and thou may livest long on the earth. Let's all stand. Father, I'm praying that we go away from here not having just heard something that's encouraging or maybe challenge us for a moment, but Lord, something that every one of us that are in here, any age, that we look at this and see the value of your authority, that we don't hate it, but we actually see that we love it, we depend on it. Lord, that we see the challenge, see it through, that we take the challenge and realize this is only good for me and my family, that I honor my parents, that my kids and maybe one day grandkids, that they will see and benefit because I got it in humility, learned what I was doing wrong, and tried to go back and make it right. Lord, that I am the father that is a blessing to the family and not a burden. A father that doesn't derail the family by leaving his imperfections unaddressed. But Lord, that they're addressed the right way, and the only way to do that is through you and applying your principles that you've written in your word. Lord, I pray that I have the humility to do that. I pray every person in here in authority, and that those that are not in authority now but will be one day, that they'll remember this, that they will apply these things as well. Lord, I pray that you bless these people as they have invested their time here, and Lord, that these things will be a blessing to them, and Lord, just bless them in their ventures and their ministry, their work, their families. And we pray all of this in Jesus' name. Amen.